Great.
So we can put the lights back up, and the panel, we can turn our attention first to Ragnar Kjartansson. So the video installation is 64 minutes in duration, and one, as is common in art installations, one is expected to be comfortable standing in the dark. Is it, Ellie, a video that one would want to arrive at the beginning and watch for an hour and 4 minutes, or what, as music is in many ways integral to this installation experience, how does the factor of duration play out in this work, do you think?
Well, I actually never saw it from beginning to end. I went several times and caught it either just after it had begun or in the middle, and I sort of felt that that was part of it. I saw it end and then immediately start to repeat, and actually that experience in itself was very moving, because as soon as it ended, I sort of felt sad and was really excited for it to begin again. And this was actually my favorite work of my favorite show of the four that we're discussing, because I felt extremely moved seeing it. I thought that the way that each individual performer exists on his or her own screen, but yet is playing together with everyone else, spoke not only to the experience of making music in a recording studio, but also to something really fundamental about the human condition. So to me, it was nice to not have to experience it from beginning to end per se, that you could come in the middle, watch the beginning, watch the end, and watch the middle again.
Right. So it is also the fact that it is multi-panel. We're in a space where there are these tableaux, of which these are stills, these are prints that are off prints, as it were, but the tableau going around the circumference of the room, and then in the middle of the room, something slightly different happening in these two central panels, recto verso, some scene of a collective scene on the terrace of this house where the recording is taking place. John Yao, we've got a John and a Jonathan, so listen carefully for your full names, if you would. John, it's a rather extraordinary setting, isn't it, this house? It's a sort of like a yardo for stoners. Do we know what the venue is?
It's the Ropey Estate, which is in upstate New York. I actually lived three doors away from it when I was a student at Bard. It's a farm. It's one of the oldest estates still existing in New York. And this very nutty man named Ricky Aldrich, who's the 10th generation descendant of it, is keeping it order, but it's sort of become this weird hippie commune with people living in different parts of the house. None of those rooms are shown. Only the rooms that nobody lives in and are somewhat preserved are shown.
Right. Yes. So very. It's obviously a very voluptuously decadent kind of environment.
Yes.
Does that go with the kind of drony, slightly lost, slightly indulgent sort of music that's being improvised?
I thought it went really well. I walked in at some point, and I didn't stand. I don't know why everybody else stood. I just sat down and decided to listen. I kind of wished that I could have laid out on the floor at some point, but I thought someone would step on me. And then I would move around the room, sitting in different positions to make sure I knew what was going on. He said two things that really interested me that I read. One was he said that he thought that Marina Abramović and Chris Burden raised performance art to the Houdini status, and that he was, when he did endurance performances, he thought that being a waiter for 12 hours was harder. And I was completely endeared to him. And then the other thing that I think is really interesting is he understands that you can say something, but it's how you say it that changes the context. So he repeats this line in the song, "The stars are exploding all around you, and there's nothing you can do." and he says it like a dirge at one point. And then by the end, he's singing it really ecstatically, like this is the best thing that ever happened. And he just takes you through all these feelings. And he said another thing, which I think poets get right, or at least this poet gets it, is he said he's not interested in story, but he's interested in feeling. I thought, yes.
Well, John, Ellie has talked about a work that really addresses the human condition. John has spoken of feeling without the boredom of its conveyance, to sensation without the boredom, feelings without narrative, which do you have something equally august to add to the group?
I will have to follow their lead. I think that for me, it was being a New Yorker and being old enough to remember that kind of communal situation and that kind of music, it had nostalgia for me.
Mm.
And I like the idea. I mean, I thought that visually speaking, to zero in on each of the people and then the communication through the headphones, I just thought that was, again, a sense of building communally to create something that was larger than the sum of its parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it. There was a quote where I think this was the artist himself. His wife, I believe, former wife, wrote the song, and
poem. It's a poem.
I'm sorry?
It's a poem that they changed into a song.
That's right. That's right. And he called it a feminine nihilistic gospel song. So there are a lot of adjectives there, so I won't try to explain.
Yes, that's certainly a new genre, or at least a compound genre, I think. Not that I'm a great expert in either gospel or any of the other list, except perhaps feminine. I glad you all liked it. I was perfectly charmed by it. It seemed harmless, but I need to hear why it really speaks to so profoundly to the human condition and to a sense of feeling and poetry that my panelists are describing. It seemed just like some rather I'm sure if they try, they're all good musicians. But for this performance, just really an essay in mood that I could pick up. What am I, as a sort of non-poet, non-rock aficionado, missing, Ellie? You said it's profound, speaks profoundly to the human condition. What do you go away feeling that you didn't feel before?
I guess I felt elated that they were each, again, alone in a room by themselves in a very, as John said, somewhat contrived room, that each room was very sort of artfully bohemian, and the people themselves had elements perhaps of pretense to them. But after a few minutes, I felt that all drifted away, and what came through was the pure emotion and shared collective experience of making the music and part, sort of throwing yourself completely into a shared experience with a group of friends or strangers or other, that I thought was almost, again, I'm no expert in religion either, but almost a religious, a shared religious experience.
What was the activity on the veranda?
There are a bunch of people sitting around. They fire a cannon off twice, which interrupts whatever mood, which I thought sort of was poetically, metaphorically correct, like nothing will stay the same, and somehow this cannon disrupts whatever mood you're in. So that was twice, and you don't know when that's going to happen. And then the other side was this kind of scene that was like depressing in some way. There's this person lying in bed, and there's someone sitting there, and you feel like there's something going on between them, but it never gets explicit. And I like the fact that nothing is explicit in the piece. It doesn't tell you how to think about it. It doesn't tell you how to feel about it. And here's these people making music. And somehow You either succumb to it and go along with it, or you resist it. And I succumbed to it. I don't listen to a huge amount of music, but I suddenly was felt the line. Well, the line that got me was the stars are exploding all around you. I have to say, I was inspired enough to think I should go home and use this line in a poem and see if I could do something with it. And I thought, if it's good enough to do that, it's a good piece. And also, I just liked the way I thought of this line. I remembered Bob Creeley reading a poem and beginning the poem over and over again, somehow till he got it right. And I felt like this one line, you could sing it in all different ways, and you kind of heard the meaning change. And I thought that that was really important, you know, that language is not... language isn't fixed, it's not transparent, that things can happen.
Maybe, ladies and gentlemen, it's a good moment to really check that your cell phones are indeed turned off.
I was going to say, that's not the piece, that's not the music.
When you hit three in a row, then you know it's a good moment to take a moment's pause there. Yes, sorry to... to punctuate that poetic line of thought, John. Jonathan, is this an essay in some ways about solipsism, communication? I mean, obviously through the headphones, there's a sense that perhaps they can tap into the collective effort. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's, I think that for me at least, that's, I wasn't as moved by the music or I couldn't catch all of the lines, and so the literary aspect of it was a little distant for me. I would say that it was sort of, for me, the concept or the idea of people working together to build something larger. That was interesting. But the final product for me just didn't quite do it. So.
Right. I found myself alighting on specific individuals usually for. Rather shallow and prurient reasons, but just to try to get into their character and perhaps see where that might lead. There was always something, though, technically annoying in each one that I did look at. Like, if there was a woman playing the accordion, for instance. I mean, she was doing something rather unusual. She was only towards the end of my second visit did I hear something of her voice. It was a particularly mousy, irritating, grating little voice. But she was breaking the mold in a way, in that she was giving a very almost histrionic kind of a screechy kind of silent performance, a sort of air guitar of the voice. And then there was this red light in the amp behind her. So every time I tried to look at her, that would blind me. From the video, is it a technically finessed piece? Do we think, or is there some degree in which the making of the work itself mirrors the lackadaisical, improvisatory nature of the scene that's being depicted? Anybody?
I thought it was just a camera put in a room, stationary. It was all set up, and then they played the kind of, all the musicians knew where the camera was, and they knew to stay within. I thought the one kind of curious thing was you knew that all these rooms were in the same house, but it made no sense at all. And that I thought was kind of interesting. I liked the fact that, I mean, I also thought of the internet. I mean, there's somebody I met here, it's like he knows me from Facebook. I mean, that there's this kind of like, they were all connected, but they were all separate from each other in some way. And I thought like that was a kind of metaphor for the moment where you could be connected and separate. You could be making music and be in separate rooms and yet somehow make something larger than the group, than the individuals. And that really, I felt, was touching. Because it does, nostalgic in a sense of going back to a certain moment in the 60s where people believed that some kind of communal possibility existed. I mean, that was certainly crashed against the rocks, but nevertheless. Some of us still have hope, small as it is.
Right, right. You just need to find a very nice house in the 1860s to revive the sensation of the 1960s and get some cute people and some amps and some pretty good pianists as well. Well, I think we'll certainly come back to Mr. Kjartansson when the audience has a chance to chime in. I wonder, Jonathan, Tam Van Tran, we've been looking at his exhibition at Amaringa, McHenry, and Yowie. Leaves of Awe. Awe-inspiring?
Not necessarily. I would say that that there's a kind of, what I found is that there's a kind of sincerity to it, and I think there was the innovation of, it's not gold, but copper, copper paper, I guess, that can be, that people can blow on or interact with. And that was interesting, but he repeated that, you know, with each panel. What I found a little more interesting was, were the dishes where, that according to the notes, showed him, or rather showed, they were the jars that his mother used to make fish paste or fish sauce. And it brings up a lot of things that I've sort of tried to talk about, which is just cultural variations, interactions between Asian and Western culture. And I find it really interesting that he grew up in Vietnam, that some of his imagery comes from the Vietnam War. He talks about, the press release talks about fishermen fishing with grenades, for example. And at the same time, he's a very sophisticated contemporary Western artist, at least in terms of living here. He's been living in Los Angeles, and in terms of the way he conceives of his position.
Right, right. And why is that much of a dichotomy? I mean, surely, is it any different from Chagall living in Berlin or the south of France and drawing on Vitebsk or any? We all come from somewhere, and artists do have a tendency to move around. So, and we all, artists generally, draw upon themselves, right?
Right. I think that's exactly the point, is that, you know, I think that the question, just how Asian is it, is sort of beside the point at this point, that we're really talking about individual connections.
Yes.
And that are meaningful to the person, and then we judge them in light of that rather than assign them to some large cultural category and make generalizations.
Good. Well, let's hope the review panel avoids making generalizations. And let's get down to some specifics. The leaves of the title, John, are we... does this put us in a Whitman-esque sort of territory?
No. I felt that there was no real... that they were sort of... the copper was... leaves were kind of in the wake of monochromatic painting. And somehow the lack of composition bothered me. And that they played too much on the kind of... I mean, they're delicate and you see it, and then after a while you go, okay, it's delicate and I see it. What else is there? And it gives me something, but I felt like it asked... Philip Guston has had this issue at some point. He said that painting... and he changes because he felt certain kinds of painting asked for too much sympathy from the viewer. And I felt like that somehow these works were asking for a kind of sympathy that I may not have wanted to give. I just felt like it didn't give me enough back.
All right. Ellie, I found actually that I had a vague sense that if I had read the press release, I would be told something about his Vietnamese childhood that would help explain why there was copper leaves fluttering. And that for that reason, I didn't want to read the press release. I just wanted to look at the works, which seemed to me, actually, they reminded me of Jasper Johns. They also reminded me of a lesser-known painter in a similar idiom, the sculptor Martin Naylor, in his turn to painting. A strange kind of monochrome in a way, because it, well, it's not untypical of many works that within the modern canon, but you don't know quite how much to invest in the actual texture and gestalt of the work, or whether just to take it on board as a generality. But I found the material was just intrinsically fascinating and to me sort of almost unprecedented. Of Jamie Lee Byers, maybe, is the only, with his use of gold, is the only person who came to mind as a precedent, really, because the phenomenal way in which it changed color from different angles in the gallery and the whole fluttering sensation was, yes, more of a novelty than an originality, perhaps, but still something rather sumptuous, something rather inviting. What was your feeling?
Well, I must say I did like the fluttering. I felt that, you know, as you walked through the gallery, it was nice to feel that the copper paintings were responding to you in some way, but I found myself really missing Tim Van Tran's earlier work, and I felt I missed, not that he ever had very overt literal imagery of any kind, but he used to, or in previous shows that I'd seen, he made these wonderful things that wonderful looked like grids that had made possibly by an alien robot of some sort. He had all this sort of sci-fi imagery, which of course ties back to his experience of coming to America and feeling like a stranger in a strange land who by technology alone has to sort of battle this alien race in an alien country. And I just felt a lot more moved in past exhibitions. This, it just didn't stir me the same way, even with the appealing fluttering. I felt it was a swing and a miss, and I've always loved his work, so.
Oh, right.
I was rather.
Are you familiar with his early work, John?
I don't, no, this was the first time I'd seen the work. I would say that I think the hard thing is just to see these paintings, if you'd call them that, as they are, and not to identify with them culturally. And I think that a purely formal reading of them is very interesting, even though I'm not completely convinced that they work.
Right.
And they're not imbued with a cultural bias either way. And I thought that was interesting. And you're right, your instincts, I think, were right, David, in the sense that you didn't want to know all the background material. And in my classes, we always talk about how much background material do you have to know when you go to see that. And I think that on that level, at least, they can be enjoyed as they are.
Right, right. Not to sound like I'm provoking you in a way, Jonathan, but it's curious to me that in both your interjections on Tam Van Tran, you said we don't want to get too worried about his culture and his ethnicity and his background, which I accepted the first time, but then the second time. So now it's beginning to sound like that is what you want to say about it. So it's a bit like there's that famous experiment that somebody said to his mother, sent to his brother. See if you can not think about our mother for a minute.
Right.
And of course, as soon as you say, you know, not think about your mother, you can't not think about your mother. So is there something about culture you want to say, or other than the fact that we shouldn't say too much about culture? Or is... and if we don't want to say about culture, then what do we get?
Well, I think that this idea about culture is a particular interest of mine and something that I worked with for many years, and I no longer feel that the same issues are at hand, and that's the reason why I mentioned it the second time.
Okay, all right, good. Well, it doesn't sound like any of us are quite as mesmerized. We have varying degrees of not being mesmerized by Tam Van Tran, and I think as none of us is. Quite convinced, nor completely put off. We're in that sort of state where we might just want to leave it there with this particular body of work. Audience, let's get your thoughts on Tam Van Tran and on Ragnar Kjartansson. And I am not going to intervene. Karen here, who's a great, has an eagle eye, will fend off the competition and take the mic to the first person who needn't be quite as shy as they're being right yet. Let's start. Oh, good.
Oh, Barry.
A past review panelist and a new welcome addition to the roster of Writers at Art Critical, Barry Schwartzky.
Yeah, with regard to the Kjartansson, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, I'm just wondering if any of you have anything to say about how that fits into a whole genre, you know, that we've seen develop over, like, at least the last 20 years of videos about music making. And I remember, like, even 20 years ago, seeing, a Stan Douglas piece about a jazz band and a Bruce Nauman one about a steel guitar player. More recently, we've seen lots of very interesting video installations by Johanna Billing, who's another Nordic artist, and in between many, many others. Any thoughts about how this fits into this whole genre?
I thought there was a show that I saw in Munich of, ECM, I believe it was, this group that filmed jazz bands often in the 50s and 60s practicing. And there was one of, now his name is just kind of the great pianist who did the Köln concert. Anyway, there was them practicing, and it just, for a moment when I was watching this.
This is not a Jeremy Della piece?
No, when I was watching them practice, when I was watching this film, I remembered that, and I remembered another one film. They're reading certain sentences from The Making of the Americans, and they're just jazz musicians practicing at the same time, and it was only stills, and I thought that he fit right into this tradition in a way. And I was sort of curious that nobody mentions that. They only mention him purely as a performance artist. But I saw him as going beyond that genre and extending it to the music. That didn't bother me, the association with Keith Jarrett. I still stayed. And I like Keith Jarrett more.
I mean, music making is obviously a compelling subject for anybody concerned with movement and time and also phenomenological issues of time and space.
I want to say more. I think the difference is it's focused in language, that he takes this phrase or two phrases. I'm falling into my feminine ways is one line, and the other line is about the stars, and he just keeps repeating it, but he changes it in the repetition, and that was where I did think of what would he do with Gertrude Stein. And later I read that he had misremembered a poem by Allen Ginsberg called Song, and he had his three nieces say the poem over and over again, misremembered. And I thought, oh, I want to go hear this. You know.
There's something, though, what is the kind of very lethargic, almost comatose, trance-like state that the whole ensemble is in? Is that, what's that about?
I thought that was about ecstasy. Tell us about reaching this ecstatic state where you just, music is coming out of you through you. It's like Jack Spicer taking dictation, right? He didn't want to write the poem, he wanted to take dictation. I thought of it as a kind of dictation, that the song guided them, and somehow he could take the words and make it become different. So.
Many of you mentioned reading about in the press release or reading about what he wrote. As critics, do you ever walk into a gallery and look at a work of art without reading anything, and as if you're writing for the first time?
Oh no, I only read this afterwards. I stay the whole hour and 20 minutes without knowing a single thing about him.
Right, and what were your thoughts before having read anything?
Mostly what I told you.
And yeah, it just it's still the same.
It was sort of supplemented by, I became really more deeply interested in because of these two things he said about performance artists that I want, and his family. I read about his background. And I mostly write about painting, and I have not really written a lot about performance, and I suddenly was thinking, maybe I'll just stop writing about painting and only write about this Icelandic performance artist. So that's how won over I was by him.
Wow, that would be one way for you to trim down the amount of number of reviews you write.
Jealous.
If it takes an hour and 4 minutes just to look at it, imagine if it, well, I'm sure you do spend an hour and 4 minutes looking at every painter you write about as well, so the point is mute.
I was just going to say, for me at least, there is the interest of there being an implied storytelling or an implied narrative. And that's so different from the other things that we saw that really stood out for me, that the song was not only an object of interest in and of itself, the coming together of the musicians and the slow crescendo had a real storytelling aspect to it. And I think in that sense, it maintained my interest.
Right.
But don't you think Tam Van Tran's work is about, comes out of a narrative to some degree if you read the press release? And it's like the illustration.
Oh, reading press release again.
No, okay, but I mean, yes. It's an illustration of a narrative that I think bothered me.
Mm-hmm. Well, but if one didn't read the press release, one would just...
Well, visually, you don't need the press release if it gets your attention. But somehow I felt like I was missing something, so I read... Well, I'm also a reader. I have to read everything that's in front of me. I mean, I can't ignore it. But nevertheless, I didn't like being... I don't know, it just bugged me. That's all I'm gonna say.
For both, I read the press release after, and I had different reactions to both. For the Kjartansen, I had already had this very emotional reaction to the piece, and then I read the press release and started immediately diving into some perhaps part largely imagined backstory about how this was a poem written by his ex-wife, and their marriage had been crumbling during the time in Sviti. I thought, oh my God, no wonder it's so haunting. He's in an incredible amount of pain. So I started adding all these things even after I'd already had one experience. With Tam Van Tran, I was already familiar with his work. So I saw the show before reading the press release and then read the press release after and tried to like it more and failed. So.
I mean, art doesn't exist apart from language as much as we'd like to think it does. Many visual artists would hope that writers would all disappear, but art does not exist apart from language.
Yes, and also, though, it is its own language to some extent. So
that's true.
Yes. Well.
One thought, quick question with the video artist. I had a hard time getting over the amount of equipment in the room that it took to create the thrall, 10 video monitors, very large, wonderful sound equipment. I was skeptical about the contrivance that it took to create the effect. And I just wondered, with all that, could he have done something even more than the I can't think of any other word, but sort of the slutty kind of brothel-esque, wonderful quality that was created. That side of it didn't jive for me with the technical wonderment of having that room and how you could possibly duplicate it in any other environment where a consumer would be stuck with this wonderful thing and having to create a sound room for it.
Right. Okay. So the were we troubled by how apparently high tech it was? I mean, compared to the budget of a Hollywood average Hollywood movie, I mean, I think it's a rather modest outlay. But yes. Anybody like to comment on that aspect, Jonathan?
Well, I think that part of belonging to contemporary art now means that we have to accept as part of the spectrum the technology that accompanies a lot of what we see. It is different from looking at a painting, and these things do sort of get in the way. But after a while, I think it's part of the scenery. And it didn't bother me personally. Although I think that for some people it might well. It's just a matter of sort of accepting what's being done and how it's being achieved.